Hi, my name is Guy Harris. I'd like to welcome you to the audio program, The Top 7 Secrets to Resolve Personal Workplace Conflict. I often introduce myself as the recovering engineer, and if you'd like to learn more about me, the products and services I offer, read blog posts, articles about conflict resolution, team dynamics, communication skills, and leadership, you can find more at my blog, recoveringengineer.com. That's www.recoveringengineer.com. So let's get started taking a look at the top 7 secrets to resolve personal workplace conflict. Before we get into that, a little personal insight. So you know a little bit about who you're working with, who you're listening to today, in case you don't know much about me already. So I live in central Indiana. I'm not originally from Indiana, but that's where I live, a pretty rural area. And it's about 45 minutes from Indianapolis, about 3 hours to Chicago. And I live out in a fairly rural area. Used to have a swimming pool in my backyard. And just for some insight on the kind of things I like to do, it tends to be woodworking, moving dirt, landscaping activities, things like that. Primarily things that I do by myself and alone. And here I am talking with you about resolving personal workplace conflict. Part of the point of sharing some of that personal preference with you is this, that by nature, I'm a person who likes to be alone and does not naturally feel comfortable interacting with people. And along the line in my professional career, I realized that communication and conflict resolution and those types of issues were really, really important for becoming successful, both in personal and professional life. And the general context we're talking about here today in this audio program is in the workplace, but even in personal life, the ability to successfully resolve conflicts, the ability to find ways to resolve conflicts in ways that we can preserve our relationship and continue working together or living together, I realized several years ago were critical issues for a happy and successful life. And as I looked around, I saw a lot of people really struggling with conflict. I personally was very conflict averse, getting back to the whole, what do I like to do? I like to do things alone kind of thing. And through really years of study and application and practice and observation and courses and books and audio programs and practice and observation and repeat the cycle over again, started to develop some insights into what is the dynamic of conflict between people and how can we effectively break that cycle and move successfully to resolution. And part of the idea for sharing some of that with you is to realize that very little of what we're going to share or what I'm going to share with you today, what we're going to discuss via this audio medium is stuff that comes naturally to me. Virtually everything is something I've learned along the line or observed in interactions that other people were having and noticing where things went wrong and where things got better. And then through diligent application and practice, I learned to apply these ideas in my own life. And key point is this, that I have not removed all conflict from my life. I am just more confident in my ability to handle it and more comfortable with the outcomes I experience in life. And I see so many other people who don't have that confidence and comfort that I'm attempting to share those ideas with people as we go along. And this is one of those ways to share it with people. And I want to let you know that I believe you've made a great choice to join me today on this audio program because you have stated by listening to this program, you have stated that you're the kind of person who's willing to take responsibility for your part of the conflict and to do things to move it forward and to look for ways and insights and tips and techniques that might help you move things to a positive resolution so that you can preserve relationships and also do business and work together and live together in successful ways. So as we get started, I want to encourage you to get something to write with if you're in a place to write. If you're listening in your car, then I wouldn't suggest you write something down. But if you are in a place where you can write, I suggest that you get a pad and pen to write some things down because there's some learning research that says that as you write things down, you remember them. And writing is a very powerful way to build concepts and build understanding and depth of insight and concepts as you write them down. And I want you to think before I get started, What's the most important thing? What's the most important idea? What's the most important concept that you want to get from this audio program? If you have that clearly fixed in your mind, you'll be more likely to hear it or hear pieces of it as we go along so that you can find ways to apply the ideas in your life. So I want you to consider that question and be prepared for some really good information, some things I found that have helped me build confidence and comfort and clarity as I approach conflict situations. What I hope you get from our time together, I hope that you get insights and perspectives that will give you less stress when you do encounter conflicts. And I say when you encounter conflicts, not if you encounter conflicts, because as of this recording, I'm nearly 50 years old. And in my time on this earth, I have noticed that there's no such thing as a conflict-free life. So when you encounter conflict, I hope that you have less stress because you have some insights on how to approach it productively. And because you have insights, you'll have greater ability to move quickly towards a resolution rather than towards an escalation. And you'll have greater ability to address conflicts constructively so that you can move, again, towards resolution and away towards escalation and destruction of a relationship. With the confidence to approach conflicts confidently and early, I hope that this brings you greater emotional control and less drama in your interactions with other people because you learn how to address them early, how to address them confidently, how to address them assertively towards resolution rather than towards escalation, and learn how to address the emotions that are packaged with conflict so that you can move forward and be successful in your personal and professional relationships. And that's what I hope you get out of today. Now, some starting thoughts as we start to move into the content, some things to consider. I'm going to share some insights and perspectives with you, and I'm operating from the assumption that we're dealing in the realm of normal human psychology as you work with people. So if you run into a person who has severe anger issues or severe emotional control issues or a clearly diagnosed psychological concern, probably what we're talking about is not the full package you need. Now, while the tips, I think, will still help even in that situation, I think you're just going to need more than what I'm covering today. This is for normal human psychology issues where there's no real significant threat of a physical response from the other person, where there's no drug or alcohol involvement, no abnormal psychology, nothing like that. Because if you run into those issues, I suggest you get some professional help and try to bring that to resolution with someone who's skilled and trained in those areas and not wing it on your own. As we start talking about conflict, it's important to realize that conflict is one of those words that has a range of meanings depending on the person who's talking about it. So let's quickly define the levels of conflict so I can clarify for you where I'm addressing my comments, what type of conflict or what level of conflict I'm talking about. And the way I talk about conflict is five different levels. There's the low level. And as we go up in level, what you find is it's increasing emotional intensity or increasing cost or time to invested to resolve the conflict. As the emotional intensity goes up, as the emotional investment goes up, it tends to take more energy, more time, more money to back it down and get it resolved. So there's level one conflicts. Those are the everyday kind of things that are just normal part of life. Probably you're not needing a whole lot of help to address those, although if they're not handled well, they can start to escalate up the level. So some of the skills we're talking about today will be things you can apply even at the everyday level to minimize the risk that they escalate to start with. When they do escalate, they will tend to rise to the level two level where they're now uncomfortable. It's not really at the point that you don't know what to do, or it may be pushing the limits of what you know how to handle. And that's this is sort of a dangerous place. Because if handled well, they can be reversed. If not handled well, they'll continue to escalate. What often happens at the uncomfortable level is we start pushing the limits of our skills. And because the limits of our skills are pushed, since we don't know what to do, we do nothing. And very few conflicts I've ever seen resolve themselves on their own. So by doing nothing, we actually buy ourselves longer lasting or more intense conflicts. Well, they could rise to the level three level. And I'm gonna jump over level three because it's easier to explain level three after I've explained levels four and five. So level four would be something that's pretty clear for people. Most people are aware of this. These are the formal process level of conflict resolution. It's anytime a third party has become formally involved in the process. For example, in a union grievance procedure, that would be a level four process. In a NLRB or EEOC or OSHA complaint or some kind of discrimination allegation, sexual harassment allegation, lawsuit, anything along those lines that triggers a formal process that has some kind of administrative requirement or legal requirement or mediation or judge requirement, that starts to take on its own rules. And the tips and techniques that I'm talking about are really intended to minimize the risk you actually get to that level, not really to get it out of that level once you get there. And then beyond that is level five. That's the very heavy investment of energy and time and emotion. Typically, you're looking at wars. That's like between nations, really, really extreme, intractable, not likely to be resolved with simple skills. Okay, I skipped over level three. Level three is a level that many people are unaware of it. And, level three is a level many people are unaware of. And because they're unaware of that level, they will skip from level two to level four. They'll go right from "I'm uncomfortable" to filing a complaint. Turns out there is an in-between level. That in-between level is where you can borrow some of the skills and techniques and approaches of professional mediators, apply it to lower level conflicts before the official process has begun, and use those skills and techniques in an unofficial capacity to push them back down. So it's beyond normal skills. It does require some study and effort to learn how to handle conflicts at this level. It does exist. There are some informal processes, and it's not my intent today to talk about the informal process. You can check my website for programs or blog posts that address the informal process. I call it the 5 D's to conflict resolution, and get more insights on that. But where we're headed today is tips and techniques that you can use in normal everyday conversations, normal everyday situations that have begun to escalate and get a little bit uncomfortable. Not quite to the point I need to file a complaint. I'm trying to avoid bringing to bear some really heavy process. It's probably a high level two or maybe low level three type conflict. Really uncomfortable, needs to be addressed, and I just need some tips for how to turn it and get it in the more positive direction. So that's the area we're targeted at today. And so as we've looked at conflict, let's also look at a definition for conflict resolution. Conflict resolution is a plan for mutually agreeable future behaviors and interactions. I'm going to say that again. It's a plan for mutually agreeable future behaviors and interactions. And if you listen carefully to that definition, you realize it's about actions, not emotions. And we acknowledge that emotions are heavily invested in a heavy part of conflict. It's just that resolution plans are targeted in the context I'm talking about here, about addressing behaviors, because emotions tend to follow behaviors. So resolution is a mutually agreeable plan for future behaviors and interactions. And mutually agreeable means this: you can't mandate a resolution. Resolution is not about winning the argument. It's about coming to a mutually agreeable plan. It's about the future. It may include understanding the past. It's really not about fixing the past. It's about the future. It's about learning from the past what behaviors and interactions might have caused us an emotional misstep or miscommunication or misunderstanding, and changing those in the future so that we can improve the odds of a connection and better relationship between the two parties, whether it's me and another party or me and helping two other parties resolve that conflict. So now we've defined conflict. The levels of conflicts, so you know where we are. We're looking at high level two or low level three conflicts. And we've defined resolution so that you know what I'm talking about. Notice that I'm not addressing, I'm not trying to fix emotions. I'm trying to address the behaviors that lead to the conflict to start with. And I'm focusing on the future, and I'm focusing on mutual understanding, not winning or getting over on another person. That is not the point of this program. It's about how do I change things to get to resolution. Okay, from there, we got some definitions on the table. We know the situations where this really is not appropriate application. Let's talk about what the seven secrets are, given the context that we're talking about today. The seven secrets for resolving personal workplace conflict. Well, secret number one is you want to keep your focus on what you can control. You have to realize that there's a difference between what you control and what you influence. There's a difference between what you control, influence, and everything else that's outside your circles of control and influence. So if you could imagine that control is a circle. There's a circle of things in your life you can control that really is comprised of your words, your actions, your reactions and responses. Right outside that circle is another circle, is the circle of influence. The circle of influence will be made up of all the people and events that you can influence by your actions, your word choices, your reactions and responses. And then beyond your circle of influence is that big world of everything else that you can neither control nor influence. The idea here for successful conflict resolution, I have to keep my focus on what I can control. You have to keep your focus on what you can control. And we have to be careful that we don't slip into trying to control other people's words, actions, and responses. That's only going to escalate the conflict. So what I mean by that is that you can adjust your behaviors to exert influence on others. And you have to resist the urge when you get into a conflict situation and your emotions get invested. You have to resist the urge to try fixing their emotions, or really fixing your emotions. You know, fix your behaviors, not your emotions. Your emotions are how you feel. It's how you respond to what you see. You might change reframe or readjust your perception or interpretation, and that might fix your emotion, but you don't really directly control emotion. It's a secondary control. You can address your emotions through your behaviors and your thoughts, but don't try to fix your emotions. Neither do you try to fix the other person's emotions, because as soon as you try to fix their emotions, you start to subtly imply that their emotions are somehow broken, and you're not validating that they have a legitimate emotional reaction to a situation. So don't try to fix their emotions. Don't try to get them to like you. While liking is a good outcome, it's a good preference, that's not really the goal. So I want to distinguish between my preference that I get to a place where we like each other versus a goal that we like each other. The goal is to come up with behaviors and interactions we can both live with. If we fix those, we'll probably like each other. So it's a side benefit. And try not to avoid the temptation to try to get them to calm down. So you see them start to get upset or agitated during a conflict conversation, and you say something like, well, now just calm down, or you don't need to be so angry, or something along those lines. Not very effective, not very helpful, tends to irritate people and escalate the conflict, actually. So I've just said something that implies we're going to talk with the person if we want to resolve the conflict. And so let me move that stronger than just an implication. It's actually a prerequisite for successful conflict resolution. We're going to have a face-to-face conversation. A lot of reasons for that. Go into that more in detail in the 5 D's for successful conflict resolution. But suffice it to say that in order to resolve a conflict with a person, you really need to have a face-to-face conversation with them. And so when you have that conversation, you want to be focusing on what you can control, focusing on your words, your actions, your tone, your body language, so that you're doing everything you can to move towards resolution. And you're focusing, you may be trying to understand their perspective. You're not focusing on their behavior so much. You're focusing on your own and controlling what you can control to bring this to resolution. And the idea here is your goal is to agree on future behaviors, and that emotions will tend to follow those behaviors. So that's secret number one. Secret number two, you want to do everything you can to get on their side of the table. Now, how do you do that? Well, you want to find a hook to understand their perspective, their viewpoint, their way of looking at things. And if you're in conflict, it is likely different from yours. That's sort of a foregone conclusion, that theirs is different from yours if you're in conflict. What is often true is it's difficult to get outside yourself to see another person's perspective very clearly if you don't have some type of model or tool or hook to help you do that. I suggest you learn to apply a pattern of behavior of some kind. My personal preference is the DISC model, because I believe it is a simple, easy to apply, even in an emotionally charged situation model. Maybe not the best clinically accurate model, but I'm not looking for clinical accuracy. I'm looking for practical application. There are other models people use, Myers-Briggs, True Colors, many other models. Personally, I use the DISC model. If you look on my website, that's the reference you're going to find me using and in my other products. And so I'm not teaching a model here today. I'm just saying that I suggest you learn a model and learn how to apply it. Patterns are patterns of behavior, patterns of communication style, patterns of conflict style help you start to understand how another person sees things, even if you don't agree with how they see it. You can at least understand it. It helps you to validate their viewpoint. Validating their viewpoint is really important because one of the things, and I learned this statement from Patrick Lencioni's book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And he says in that book that reasonable people, remember we said normal human psychology, so I'm assuming reasonable people don't need to get their way so much as they need to be heard and understood. So when you can understand another person's perspective and validate they have a legitimate viewpoint, even if you don't agree with it, that you can see how they saw it that way, you're going to tend to de-escalate the conflict. So get on their side of the table. Understand their needs. And finally, a pattern helps you to know what pushes your hot buttons so you can have better emotional control. For example, I know that for me, respect and appropriateness, meaning like following the rules, is a hot button for me. So when I see people violate respectful behaviors from my viewpoint or violate rules from my viewpoint, it tends to trigger me to respond negatively. And I have to be on guard for that to make sure I'm not going overboard with that reaction. So patterns help you know how your responses might be different from someone else's. And so you can see where your response, even though appropriate for you, might seem inappropriate to them. So it gets your buttons pushed, you respond, and then you actually escalate the conflict because you're responding from your viewpoint instead of understanding their viewpoint. Knowing a pattern of behavior will help you do that. It helps you get outside yourself and be a little more objective about things. Okay, so as you try to get on their side of the table, you want to realize that everything people do makes sense to them. I'm going to say it again. Everything people do makes sense to them. Even if it doesn't make sense to you, if it looks crazy to you, it's not crazy as far as they're concerned. It makes perfect sense to them. So I learned three things from a book called Negotiation Genius. And if you'd like to learn perspectives about the negotiation process and how that applies in conflict, I suggest you read that book. But here are the three things I say in that book that are really powerful. First thing is that they don't have all of the information you have. Second one is they have constraints that you don't understand. And third, they have interest that you don't understand. I'll pick those apart just a little bit. So they're not crazy. They don't have all the information you have. There's something you know they don't know. That they have made a decision based on partial information, and if they knew what you knew, they might decide differently. So the way we approach that is to realize maybe they don't know everything we know about a situation or know all the facts behind something, so I can listen for missing pieces of information and look for an opportunity to share it with them as a way to resolve the conflict, getting on their side of the table. What piece of information are they missing? Or they have constraints that you don't understand. For example, they have budgetary constraints or time constraints or family situation constraints, or they're working with a process in their department or their part of the business that conflicts with the process that's in your part of the business. So those will be structural constraints in the business that cause them to behave in ways that don't really make sense to you. And if you understood them, you would understand their perspective better. Or they have interests that you don't understand. They have things they're concerned about. They have family concerns or health concerns or time concerns, sort of like constraints, a little bit different. Or maybe they have a different objective because of something they're trying to accomplish that you're not aware of. So they have interests that you don't understand. If you can see their behaviors in the light that they're not crazy, that there's some legitimate driver behind that behavior, then you can start to look at it differently and get on their side of the table as you try to resolve the conflict. So that would be secret number two. Get on their side of the table. Secret number three. You want to make yourself non-threatening. Make yourself non-threatening. It turns out that there is a pretty common cycle that happens as conflicts escalate, that one person says or does something that the other person takes as a threat. Threats can be many kinds. You can lose face is a threat. Being treated disrespectfully can be a threat. Some people are threatened if they think you don't like them. Some people are threatened if they think what you said doesn't make sense. List goes on and on. Part of understanding what people might perceive as a threat comes from understanding the models of behavior that I talked about earlier. in the conceptual sense anyway, person A says or does something that person B takes as a threat. When person B takes it as a threat, they start to get a little bit agitated, possibly a little bit angry. When they get angry, they react rather than respond well. When they react, that behavior or tone or word choice may not be ideal, which means that the person who started the whole thing, or had the first behavior, I shouldn't say started, but had the first behavior or word choice or tone, now receives that response as a threat. So they get angry. And when they get angry, they say something or do something that's a little bit edgy and feeds the perception of threat. And now we have two people who are perceiving threat in each other, and they're locked in an escalating energy cycle of conflict. And it's a very common thing, and it can happen very, very quickly. And I remember one situation with my wife. We had gone to dinner in Indianapolis. It's about an hour from our home, downtown Indianapolis anyways, about an hour from our home. And it's amazing how far south the conversation can go in an hour when you have little bitty incremental threats built into it. And so we started off this great evening downtown, and by the time we got home, we were so irritated with each other. We had gradually increasing conflict all the way home. And it started with something so minor, neither of us could even remember the next morning, or the next afternoon, I should say, really what had happened to cause the conflict to begin. Now, we realized that, and we were able to resolve it pretty easily. And it just illustrates how easily a little bitty misstep, a little miscommunication can cause a perception of threat. And that perception of threat turns into another miscommunication. And then they build on each other and layer on each other. So what I want to learn from that is I want to try to understand what it is I'm saying or doing that the other person receives as a threat, and then either first stop saying or doing that, and then second, find a different way to interact with them so that I behave in a way that's not threatening. So secret number three, make yourself non-threatening to the other person. It makes it safe for them to interact with you and then to pursue resolution. On the other side of the escalation cycle is the de-escalation cycle. And it's built on understanding some emotional pressures. And one emotional pressure is this pressure called, or response called, the inhibitory reflex, which says that as soon as one person is willing to submit or reveal a vulnerability, like apology or accepting a valid point, something like that, as soon as that happens, it triggers a response in the other person that causes them to back off just a little bit. It may not totally solve things, but it takes the edge off of the perception of threat. There's also a piece of us that when we're face to face with people, we find it difficult to remain angry or remain elevated for very long. And that's because we have a desire, most of us at least, have a desire to be at peace with other people. So when we are face-to-face talking about a problem, remember I said that we're going to have a face-to-face conversation, it tends to put pressure on us to move towards a peaceful resolution if we stay engaged in the conversation. So we got inhibitory reflex and desire for peace. Then we have reciprocity. So if I can trigger reciprocity, and reciprocity says this, that people tend to feel obligated to repay what they've received. So reciprocity says people tend to feel obligated to repay what they have received. So if I can behave respectfully, if I can build trust, if I can remove threat, I tend to trigger in the other person a desire to remove their threat. And so now we're moving mutually towards resolution. Even though we're not there yet, by making myself non-threatening, I invite the other person to become non-threatening with me. And then we move down the de-escalation cycle rather than up the escalation cycle. So secret number three for resolving personal workplace conflict is to make yourself non-threatening. Some ways you can do that are, I'll summarize again, you can apologize for your contribution. Very seldom have I seen any conflict that is entirely one person's fault. It may have started with an aggressive act on part of one person and then was contributed to by the retaliatory action of the second person. Well, you can own your retaliation without trying to justify it. You can just say, yes, you're right. I raised my voice. For that, I'm sorry. You don't have to try to justify it or rationalize it. Just apologize for it. If they offer an apology or some kind of concession, you can just acknowledge it without trying to take advantage of it. So, for example, in the case where the other person was maybe aggressive with you and they apologize for being aggressive, you would want to resist the urge to say something like, so you admit you were wrong. That's not going to help. Just graciously accept anything they offer. Make yourself a non-threatening person to them. Secret number three, make yourself non-threatening. Secret number four, to resolve personal workplace conflict, show unqualified respect. You could substitute unearned, unmerited, undeserved for unqualified. Show unqualified respect. What this means is that I choose to remain respectful to the other person regardless of how they react to me. And the reason you do that, well, part of it goes back to secret number three, which is make yourself non-threatening. If you're respectful, you're non-threatening. But it also does this. It reduces the odds of escalation because it builds on the principle of reciprocity. If I am respectful towards them, they're more likely to be respectful towards me. Remember, people tend to feel obligated to repay what has been given to them. So it builds on the principle of reciprocity. And it also minimizes the risk of self-justifying behaviors on the part of the other person. And what does that mean? Self-justification is a process most of us have in our heads, almost all of us, which says that we look really, really hard, really long at other people's behaviors to look for reasons to explain why we behaved the way we did. For example, I am sitting in a meeting and a person raises their voice at me, and then I raise my voice at them. Objectively, it wasn't really okay for me to raise my voice at them. So what I do is I justify my having raising my voice because they raised their voice. Therefore, me behaving in an out of control way becomes their fault. Self-justification. Well, that works for other people too. So what I want to do is make sure I'm not doing anything in my interaction with the other person that they could then turn into a justification for what they did that contributed to the conflict. I want to behave in a way that removes that self-justification. Really good example of this is seen in the movie Invictus. It's about Nelson Mandela and the South African rugby team. If you ever want to see unqualified respect in action, you can watch that movie, or you can read the book, Playing the Enemy. So really good example of just showing respect, even towards an aggressor, and it can gradually, over time, wear down their aggression. So what does unqualified respect look like? Well, you want to control your body language and tone. Be careful that you're not using aggressive body language postures like leaning over someone, or closing the distance with someone, or pointing your finger, or anything along those lines, raising your voice, anything like that. Remember that emotions are open loop. Open loop means this, that our emotional system receives most of its input from outside of our bodies. That means that my behaviors are an input to the other person's emotions, or your behaviors are an input to the other person's emotions. So if you have behaviors that are received or interpreted as angry or aggressive, you are feeding anger and aggression into the other person. If you keep yourself calm, you are feeding calm into the other person, and you just might influence them to calm down with you. You want to be gracious. So if you do have authority or power, you want to, in the moment of conflict resolution, you want to make sure you're not exercising authority or power. You're not threatening to take it to an authority or power person at the moment. Gracious. If they offer something, you receive it graciously. You stay engaged in the conversation. If you walk away from a person in the middle of their frustration, you take away their feeling of being heard and you become a threat. Walking away is actually an aggressive response rather than a passive response. It is seizing control of the moment and refusing to listen to the other person. So beware of walking away. If you start a conflict conversation, you want to stay engaged in it and learn how to accept their viewpoint even when you disagree. And that's all part of showing unqualified respect. The key is unqualified. You show respect whether they have earned it or not. Unqualified, unmerited, unearned, undeserved. I offer respect because I offer respect. End of story. Secret number five. Learn to separate the topic from the issue. Okay, so the topic is often what people notice first, and it's where they focus in the conversation. And the issue is often the real source of the conflict or the driver for the drama that's going on in the interaction. So the secret number five is to learn how to separate the topic from the issue. I'll give you two examples to help illustrate what that means. So the topic might be, in one case, one partner or one family member is late for dinner. Late for dinner is the topic. The issue is that the person who fixed dinner has hurt feelings or feels unappreciated or feels disrespected or some variation thereof. So what we'll wind up talking about is late for dinner, which is in the past, because it's already happened, and we're not really addressing changing the behaviors that can fix the issue. So as we start moving towards resolution, learn from the late for dinner, hear hurt feelings, and talk about behaviors that fix future options that might hurt feelings. So the conversation then becomes about what will I do the next time there's some type of dinner commitment? How will I make sure I'm on time? Rather than spending a lot of time talking about the past event. So separate the topic from the issue, hear that there are hurt feelings involved, and talk about how the behaviors can be different in the future to avoid the situation happening again. Similar type of thing can happen at work. Now, in work, people are probably even less likely to share their emotional backdrop behind what frustrates them. But let's say a coworker interrupts you and you find yourself getting angry. If you think about why you're getting angry, the real issue is not being interrupted. The real issue is how that interruption affects your ability to do your job, to get your things done, to meet your deadlines, to get home for your kid's soccer game or baseball game. Somehow that interruption has another impact. So the frustration probably isn't about the interruption itself. That's the topic. The issue is what that interruption means in your life. So if you can learn to separate the topic from the issue, you can learn to identify what your hot button is and what's frustrating you if you're the person who's receiving. You can also learn to hear the issue in the other person's statements. What's really the issue here? So I can find behaviors that address it. So that if you find your button being pushed because you have constraints or frustrations or time issues, and a person interrupts you or cuts you off in a meeting or whatever the case may be, you can find ways to address the real issue that's frustrating you. So, for example, I was in a meeting one time, an organization I belonged to, and somebody came in and sort of took over the one meeting I was in to share issues they had concern over. And I started to get frustrated. And as I tried to objectively evaluate what was going on, in the middle of being frustrated, I realized that my frustration hinged not on the fact that they had something to say, but that I didn't really have the time to give them an opportunity to voice it. I had other time constraints. And so as a way to try to back out of it without coming across aggressive towards them as like, I don't really have time to hear you, or I don't want to hear you, maybe is a better way I'm trying to avoid. I don't want this to come across that I don't want to hear you. It's that I have other constraints on my time right now. I don't have time at the moment to hear you. So I was able to verbalize the frustration in a way that wasn't about them. It was more about the issues that were constraining me and help lead it to resolution a little bit more quickly. So secret number 5, learn to separate the topic from the issue. Secret number 6, stay focused on the future. Now, this doesn't take a whole lot of explanation. It's a pretty straightforward secret. You want to make sure you're not trying to fix the past. Remember, the past is outside anyone's circle of control. It's already happened. You do not try to fix the past. You want to stay focused on the future. So you want to focus on future behaviors as your resolution conversation progresses. You can learn from the past. You can look at the past long enough to understand how those past behaviors created certain emotional reactions and how they created situations. Just don't stay there. What you really want to do is seek agreement from each person involved in the conflict on what they will do in the future if this situation comes up again. So you want to seek agreement on what each person will do in the future rather than what they did in terms of justifying in the past. I don't want to justify what's already happened. It's happened, it happened, and okay, it's over. Now what do we do next time? That's really the key. Well, the idea here for stay focused on the future is you can learn from the past. You can talk about the past long enough to learn from it and understand it and see what kind of decisions were made. And then as soon as you understand that, move on. Don't live there. You can learn from the past. Don't live in it. So secret number 6 to resolve personal workplace conflicts is to stay focused on the future. Secret number 7. Communicate clearly and assertively. Well, if you look at communication as a continuum that goes from left to right, in with shades of gray of different kinds of communication all along this line of continuum. You can see on the left side, we would have what we call passive communication strategies. Passive strategies are strategies that allow you to step on me or allow another person to step on you without you getting your case heard. And the challenge with pursuing passive strategies is that passive strategies tend to eventually turn into the other kind, which is aggressive. We'll get to that in a moment. But passive strategies are not necessarily silent, though. That's an important point. You can speak and remain passive. So passive strategies are any communication strategy that allows you to step on me. So if I'm overly apologetic or making excuses for their behavior rather than being assertive about my concerns, I become passive and I let other people step on me. The other extreme, all the way to the right-hand side of this line of continuum, would be aggressive communication strategies. Aggressive strategies are strategies I employ or that you employ that step on another person's interests or concerns without really listening to what they have to say. Really, it violates the previous secret where I said try to get on their side of the table. Also, aggressive strategies step on the other person and, again, add to the perception of threat. And I said that passive strategies, if you follow them for too long, can turn into aggressive strategies because eventually you will crack. You cannot be passive forever. Eventually you will have had as much as you can take, and then you'll probably jump right over assertive and go to aggressive. That's why I suggest you learn how to use assertive communication strategies and you use them frequently and early in potentially escalating conflict situations to help turn them in the positive direction. Assertive strategies are built on the idea of unqualified or unconditional respect, and they create a place for both parties to be heard and understood. Assertive strategies range, though. There's not like a single strategy that's assertive. So some assertive strategies and tones and word choices are a little bit towards the passive side, and some are a little bit towards the aggressive side. There's a range of these strategies. The key is you want to choose the approach that fits your situation, your relationship, your context, that you find the need to use an assertive strategy. There's some general rules, you know, within that range of assertive communication strategies. There are some kind of guideline rules. Now, one of them is that you can note a behavior without labeling it. For example, if you see a behavior that you perceive as being rude, you want to be careful not to say that the person is rude. You want to note the behavior that you would call rude. So, for example, you would say rolling eyes, turning to walk away, and a sigh. Those are behaviors that you interpret as rude. So you note the behavior rather than label the person. So, for example, rude, disrespectful, bad attitude, those are all interpretations. Rolling eyes, sighing, turning, walking away, hand gestures, facial expressions, tones, those are objective and observable. So you want to note those things. You want to find ways to express your emotion or your perception or your interpretation without blaming the other person for having had that emotion. What I mean by that is this. Often I hear people say things like this. You made me mad. Well, the reality is no one makes you mad. You get angry or you become mad because of your interpretation of what their behavior means, what probably means you perceive their behavior or their words to be a threat to you. So your interpretation of their behavior caused you to be mad. Well, that's all inside your head. My mad is all inside my head. No one makes us have any emotion. It is true because our emotions are open loop. Their behaviors have an impact on us and feed into our emotion. It does not make the emotion. That's a really critical, sounds like semantics. It's really critical in terms of keeping your communication clear and assertive rather than aggressive. So when I learn how to express my emotions or my perceptions without blaming the other person, remember that assertive communication protects both my interest and theirs. So I want to avoid labeling them, and I want to avoid suppressing my emotions. I want to do both. And when I do that, I want to own everything that's mine, and I don't want to take anything that's theirs. I own everything that's mine means that my behaviors are my behaviors. I own them. I'm responsible for them. My emotions are my emotions. They're based on my thoughts and my interpretations and my perceptions. I own them. I'm responsible for them. Their behaviors are their behaviors. They own them. They're responsible for them. I'm not taking responsibility for them. I'm not letting them give me responsibility for them. Their emotions are their emotions. I'm not taking responsibility for their emotion. I'm not letting them give me responsibility for their emotion. For example, if I apologize, I will apologize for my behavior. I will not apologize for their feeling, which would sound something like this. I am sorry I raised my voice, as opposed to I am sorry you feel that way. Key difference, own what's yours, don't take what's theirs. You're responsible for your feelings, emotions, and behaviors. They're responsible for theirs. There is an interplay between them, and the responsibility needs to land with the person who owns them. So how do you do this? Well, there's a formulaic answer, and it goes something like this. When you blank, I felt blank. And they fill it in with their behavior and your feeling. When you walked away, I felt unheard. When you raised your voice, I felt angry. When you pointed your finger, I felt threatened. When you asked that question, I felt backed into a corner. Many, many different ways you can say it, and you could probably adjust it a bit as you get comfortable with it. The formulaic approach, though, is when you blank, I felt blank, or when you blank, I perceived it as, or when this happened, I understood it to mean, something along those lines. It's a very specific, objective behavior, tone, word choice, something they did, and then how you took it or interpreted it. Those are assertive communication strategies because it puts your concern on the table or your interpretation on the table without labeling them in some negative way. For example, you are rude is a negative label. I see rolling eyes as rude, a little different. They still might not like it. It's just more difficult for them to then blame you for it if you haven't been aggressive in how you said it. So you'll learn how to communicate assertively and clearly. Secret number 7, communicate assertively and clearly. Well, that brings us to the end of our Top 7 Secrets to Resolve Personal Workplace Conflict audio program. As we're wrapping this up, I hope that you're going to look over your notes today. I hope you're going to continue in your process of studying, because one of the things I've learned is that mastery is on the other side of failure. And I use this example frequently as one of the things I'm doing in my life right now, have been doing for a while, is learning how to play the acoustic guitar. Frankly, it's a painful effort. And if someone shows me how to do a particular chord pattern on the neck of the guitar, first time I see it, I have to work really hard to do it. And I can't do it without thinking about it and without practicing a great deal. As I practice, I get better, and eventually it's not so hard. Well, it's the same thing with some of the things we've talked about here, or with all of the things we've talked about here. You've got to practice them to get good at them. So here's what I suggest you do. I suggest you think through what we've talked about and come up with 1 to 3 action items, 1 to 3 things you intend to apply in the next day or so. Think of someone you're in conflict with, or think of someone you've been in conflict with that you'd like to get it addressed. And think of 1 to 3 specific actions you can take based on the concept I've shared here today that you can take that are different from what you've done in the past. Go try them out. Go see how it works. Go see where it fails. Go see how you need to adjust it to do better the next time. And take action soon. Also, find someone who you can teach these concepts to. Not by giving them the audio program, but by actually sitting down and teaching the idea, talking with the person about it, getting their perspective, wrestling with it a little bit. As you teach it to someone else, you're going to learn more yourself. And I encourage you to stay engaged in the game. Go to my blog, recoveringengineer.com. And look for blog posts. There are blog posts, videos, audio programs, other resources like this one available, and book recommendations. Stay in the game. Keep learning. Keep growing. I applaud you on joining me for this audio program. I hope it's been a benefit to you. And I encourage you to practice it so you get good and that you have happy, productive, healthy relationships, both at work and at home, and that you can confidently and comfortably address conflicts before they spiral out of control, applying these 7 tips, these 7 secrets to resolving personal workplace conflict. I'm Guy Harris. I'm the Recovering Engineer. You can find more about me at my blog, recoveringengineer.com. Go forth and have a great day. Well, you know, my name's Guy Harris, and I introduce myself as a recovering engineer. The way I make my living, the way I live indoors, the way I feed my kids, the way I pay for their college education, the way I pay for my health insurance comes from programs like this, coaching clients, from training and situations. So while I'm happy that you purchased this program, I want you to realize that this is my livelihood here, and I hope that you'll honor it. And if you want copies of it, please contact me. I'd be glad to work with you on group copy rates of it. If you want to pass it on to someone, that's great. I just ask, please don't make illegal copies. That hurts me. That hurts my family. And I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't do it. Have a great day. And I look forward to seeing you on another program at another time.